You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You are now tuned in to the Roto Experts.
Good morning. It's Sunday. Time for another fantasy week. Welcome to the Roto Experts in the Morning here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I am Scott Engel, the Managing Director of RotoExperts.com. I am the king. I am fantasy here as always with my trusty colleague, George Blue Line Kurtz. George, how are you, brother?
Good morning, Scott. I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing all right. I don't sound as relaxed nearly as you.
Well, you know, I thought, how can you not be relaxed? Sunday morning, you know, baseball today. I know the weather's not that great, and early going, Scott. A lot of rain outs, snow outs, and a lot of injuries.
I guess it depends on where you live. I mean, you are thinking locally here, but I guess if you lived in Arizona or Florida and you're listening to the Roto Experts in the morning, you wouldn't feel the same way. But yes, I believe there were three cancellations yesterday because of the weather.
I think we're expecting a bunch more today as that weather now heads from Minnesota, Cleveland, and Detroit yesterday. It's going to continue out close to the Northeast. They're worried about the Yankees, that doubleheader. Their both games might get wiped out again today. I think Minnesota already canceled again, I believe.
Yeah, I believe so. And you know, maybe it's God's way of saying it's too early for baseball and you should watch the NBA and the NHL playoffs, because I'll tell you, I was watching that Portland-New Orleans game late last night, and boy, what an ending. It's, yeah, New Orleans pulling the upset last night over Portland, but the Blazers, even though they didn't get good performances from their top two players early on, with a real surge down the stretch, and then defense really kicked in for New Orleans, especially with Jrue Holiday down the stretch. And the NHL playoffs, has it been exciting for you so far?
Well, let's put it this way. I'm glad the show was on Sunday morning and not Saturday morning, as Friday night the Kings and Vegas Golden Knights, they played till about 3 a.m. Eastern time as they went to double overtime here. So it was sleep a little bit yesterday. Wouldn't have been the case today. Hockey playoffs to me, and you know me, I'm a baseball guy, a football guy. Hockey playoffs, specifically overtime, are just nuts. It's psychotic. It's exciting. So playoff season is here in those two sports.
Yeah, I don't even think anybody watches during the regular season anymore. It's just like they wait towards the playoffs. I don't hear anybody talking about hockey until the playoffs.
Well, obviously I do. I'm in a different group of people. I'm around a lot of hockey fans. Matter of fact,
well,
I'll be
you're a hockey
later.
Referee, so obviously.
And I'll be refereeing later on today, actually. Right after the show, I have to ref.
Aren't the ratings real down for the NHL this year, though, I heard?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure. I don't really follow the rating. I know there's a conspiracy theory that the reason, if you're watching hockey, yes, NBC, which has the rights, they put two games on at once, which is unusual, especially on a Saturday, because you can easily stagger the games 1-4-7-10, 12-3, whatever you want to do, easy. But NBC didn't, and some conspiracy theorists think NBC is paying back the NHL for not sending their players to the Winter Olympics and therefore killing those ratings.
Well, speaking of conspiracies, though, and I'm going to bring this up in a second about Dez Bryant, because we all know the conspiracy about 2014 and the catch that wasn't a catch. But we'll also have some at-the-park interviews this morning. George, coming up this hour, we have Chase Anderson from the Milwaukee Brewers, who won last night, handing the Mets just their second loss of the year. In the second hour, we hear from first baseman Eric Thames. In the third hour, we hear from Michael Conforto, who recently returned from an injury. But Dez Bryant, released by your Dallas Cowboys on Friday, and according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, four teams are now showing interest in Dez. They include the Baltimore Ravens, the Buffalo Bills, the Green Bay Packers, and the Arizona Cardinals. Now, looking back on the Tony Romo-Dez year, it was mostly unsuccessful because I think Cowboy fans probably expected a lot more out of that duo in terms of postseason heroics, etc. But Dez isn't quite done yet in the NFL, but it looks like already physically his best years might be behind him. And you know, there's a lot of criticism going around that he didn't try to remake himself like Larry Fitzgerald did when his skills started declining. And it's been a quick decline for Dez. He had a good 3-year run early in his career, but injuries have really caught up for him, caught up with him, and now the Cowboys have completely moved on from that Tony Romo, Dez Bryant sort of era, which was underachieving, it seemed, overall in retrospect. And what do you think would be best for Dez going forward?
You said it correctly in your last line. Injuries have caught up to him. They've caught up to him in a hurry. It zapped his speed. He was never a true speed burner anyway, but it zapped every ounce of speed. He's the kind of guy now where you're going to need a quarterback to trust as far as throwing the ball up to him that he can go out and catch it. He's not going to have major separation. So if you're looking for that, you can forget about it. He is a jumper, a guy who can go up and get the ball. He's still a physical mismatch for most corners. His size, his strength is there. He's a guy with a good alley-oop in the end zone if you like that play. But if someone you're going to throw 90, that's going to catch 90 to 100 balls, that's not happening. He's not that receiver anymore. The four teams you mentioned weren't teams that are interested. They're teams that Adam believes could have an opening for him. Some people believe San Fran with Shanahan would be very good for Dez as well here. He's going to have some problems. How much money does he want? If he thinks he's going to get, you know, $10, $12 million on a multi-year deal, it's not going to happen, especially at this point in the offseason here. He may have to do what Alshon Jeffrey did last year. Sign that one-year $7 million contract, $6 million contract, a make good contract, have a good season, then go for the multi-year deal. But even that may be tough to find at this point. Scott, we're in April. Teams have solved their offseason, their wide receiver issues right now. Well, they think they have. They don't have a lot of cap money left. They're focusing on the draft. They may think, hey, why do I want to spend $6 million for a declining player when I can draft that wide receiver in round one or round two? So Dez in a tough spot, though. I think Baltimore makes some sense. We know they had receiver problems. But isn't Crabtree similar to what Dez is and maybe even a little better at this point in their careers?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. They do have the cap room, as reported by Schefter. Buffalo, the quarterback situation there, A.J. McCarron, pretty much an unknown, and who do they draft? Arizona, you only have Sam Bradford, and they don't have much behind him at all, unless they draft someone as well. And Green Bay, that would probably seem to be the best fit. But Aaron Rodgers is not a guy that... Yeah, I don't think he's going to change what he does for a wide receiver, and I don't think he's definitely going to feed the ball all the time to Dez in the end zone. But I think that he can replace what Jordy Nelson did there. He threw so much to Jordy in the red zone 2 years ago. Maybe he can replace him in that sort of way.
I don't see him going to Green Bay, not his antics and stuff like that, where he's sort of the guy. That's Aaron Rodgers there. I don't know if they want to put up with that. Dez, as the reports are coming out now, whether you believe him or not, late to a lot of practices, doesn't always know his routes, doesn't run crisp routes. I just don't see that flying in Green Bay. I just don't. I don't think they'll go for him. I don't think Dez will go to Buffalo. That's in the middle of nowhere for a team that's going to have some kind of rookie. I guess McCarron technically wouldn't be a rookie, but a young quarterback either way. I think Arizona does make some sense, but once again, isn't he similar to what Larry Fitzgerald is now? And they already have one of those. They also signed another ex-Dallas wide receiver in Bryce Butler. Like I said, there'll be some surprise teams anyway. Baltimore does seem to make the most sense. They need as much wide receiver help as they can possibly get. But what does Flacco throw to do well? He throws the deep ball well, and that may not be what Dez is good at now, to get deep down the field.
One team that really still needs a wide receiver that really didn't do too much in free agency, Mitch Trubisky could use a big target like Dez in Chicago. I don't know what their cap situation is.
Yeah, I don't think cap is going to play a major part because he's not going to get major money. If he wants major money, he's going to be sitting out until August and hope an injury happens here, because I just can't see that happening at all. No team's going to give him big-time bucks. They've already spent that money. And even if Dez was a free agent, March 12th when free agency started, I don't know if he would have got big bucks anyway. He would have got bigger than what he's going to get. But not truly big bucks. Once again, he doesn't have that skill set anymore. The injuries, the sideline antics, which is, a lot of players do that, but that plays down on him. Missing the practicing, always showing up late, pretty much needing a caddy for his personal life. Not good for what teams want to see here. So I think Dez is going to have he's in for a rude awakening. He thinks a lot of teams are going to be open for dying to get him. I think he does still have something left if used appropriately. if used the right way. And I just don't see that many grand opportunities where he'll be used the right way. Chicago, they just signed Allen Robinson. You know, could they use another one? Sure, you know, they don't have Cam Meredith, but are they going to give? Do they want to give Kevin White a shot? With young teams, Scott, I just wonder if young teams are going to want to deal with someone like Dez, that you know, almost bigger than life personality and everything that comes along with it.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that is exactly why. You know, they did get Robinson, but they still have a void next to him. It seems like Taylor, you can't depend on Taylor Gabriel every down. If you have an opinion, we want to hear from you. 844-843-6879. Some other strategic spots, you know, that might make sense is Indianapolis. They really don't have anyone out there besides T.Y. Hilton to throw to. You know, T.Y. Hilton's more of a speed burner. You know, to have a guy who is a big target like that across from T.Y. Hilton, I think would make a lot of sense. I don't think you could ever count the New England Patriots out because you just never know what they're going to do. There's talk about the Giants because he wants to stay in the NFC East, and maybe that would make the most sense there because Brandon Marshall really didn't show a whole lot last year. So maybe, you know, that's another possible place. You mentioned San Francisco, not a lot of established wide receiver targets out there. And then there's, you know, if he wants to stay in the NFC East, there's always, you know, maybe Washington wants to give him a shot. But I think a team that really has a hole that could use a guy like Dez, especially if Andrew Luck is coming back, is could be the Colts.
Colts, you look at their wide receiver, that they would make some sense because Hilton's more of a deeper threat, so Dez could work some magic underneath. And in the end zone, they could use that wide receiver to catch the ball in the end zone. They did sign Ryan Grant. Once again, I think that hurts them, hurts Dez as far as going there. But Indianapolis, I agree. I think he would make some sense there. I know Dez wants to play in the NFC East. Reports are none of the teams are interested. You know, once again, we don't know how true that is, but that the Eagles, Giants, Redskins, you know, not interested for very different reasons as far as they've already made their moves, don't want to get someone like Dez. Can you imagine Odell Beckham and Dez together? Boy, that would be fun. So I don't know if that's going to happen.
Much personality there.
Right. I think the Giants got their hands full just with Odell more just adding Dez to that mix. That could be fire and gasoline there. I think Seattle could be interesting as well. Yeah, but I just don't think he fits that offense as far as Russell Wilson running around making plays. Although then again, Dez isn't known to run the crispest of routes either.
He could conceivably replace Jimmy Graham in that red zone role that there for the big target. So I can see it making sense from that perspective. And I don't. Pete Carroll has never been averse to bringing in guys with strong personalities, if that's the way you want to term it for Dez. And he would give him a big wide receiver. A lot of people wonder why they let Paul Richardson go. I think because they really expect Mari Darboh to take a big leap this year. But they really don't have a big target. So I could see Seattle making sense as well. And I think it'd be a good environment for him to try to resurrect his career as well. So, yeah, Indianapolis and Seattle are two very interesting landing spots. But I think, you know, Dez's legacy is going to always be like, what if he would have caught the ball? If Dez, now I've known that a lot of Cowboy fans who are not as balanced as you in their view assume that the Cowboys would go to the Super Bowl and maybe have a shot to win it if he would have made the catch. But I think there's other factors in there that you have to consider before you assume that. What was your feeling? What would have happened if he would have made the catch? How do you think the season would have ended up for them that year?
Would have ended up a minute later when Aaron Rodgers marched this team down the field to win the game. People act like that play was a last-second play. There was more than enough time for Aaron Rodgers to do his magic there. So I have a hard time believing that Rodgers wouldn't have come down and done the damage there. It reminded me of the game in the Seattle game, the playoff game, where Romo fumbled the snap. People forget, once again, there was a minute 15 left on the clock. All he needed is a field goal in that game. And Dallas defense was very good. And really, either one of these. So I have a hard time believing either game they would have won. So Dez did make the catch. I mean, it was always ridiculous because it was even worse than what they call him now. He took a step and a half or two steps. What else do you want the guy to do? But I don't think things would have changed all that much. Maybe Aaron Rodgers doesn't lead them down. The defense did over, really, primarily had the best game of their season against the Green Bay that game. But just like as we saw about 2 years ago when Rodgers did the same exact thing, under a minute, led the team down, I have a hard time believing they don't do it again.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. There was still 4.5 minutes left for Aaron Rodgers. I believe he was a league MVP last year, to march down the field against a defense that he had already scored 26 points again. And there was no guarantee that they were going to win in Seattle the next week just because they had beat them early in the regular season. That Seahawks team was playing a lot better than, you know, by that point. And there was talk like they actually wanted Dallas to win that game because they were waiting for them to kind of, you know, seek revenge on them. And they were actually disappointed when Green Bay won.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think if you're a Cowboy fan, you're upset you lost the opportunity. Right. You know, and I get that. I'm upset they lost the opportunity. I truly, you know, like I said, I believe Dez caught the ball, but I also believe Green Bay would have won that game anyway. So, listen, it happens. The best thing that happened this offseason was they sort of fixed the catch rule. Maybe they fixed the catch rule. I think we're still going to have some controversy here because of the wording, but at least they got rid of the, you have to have it to the ground. And that always was just a silly, silly little rule.
All right, we got some baseball talk coming up next. Next, we'll go at the park with Chase Anderson of the Milwaukee Brewers. And that'll be one of three interviews that you hear today here on the Roto Experts. We are back every week on Sunday morning, 9 to noon. You can always listen to us on demand. What a great way to get set for your fantasy week. The Roto Experts in the morning. At the park, next, Milwaukee Brewers style.
Playing daily fantasy basketball this year? Consider Daily Roto your go-to resource. Whether you play on DraftKings or FanDuel, Daily Roto's customizable projections, podcasts, strategy guides, and lineup optimizer will help you compete with the pros in a fraction of the time. With a team featuring millionaire maker winners and live final champions, there's no better place to get your NBA DFS content. Better yet, you can save 10% using the promo code FNTSY. So go to dailyrotor.com/premium and learn more about our awesome product.
Back here on the Roto Experts, Scott Eng with George Kurtz. Switching a little gears to fantasy baseball here. And don't forget, dominate DraftKings and FanDuel Major League Baseball contest this summer with Daily Roto's MLB projections and optimizer. Go to dailyroto.com/premium and save 10% with the promo code FNTSY to use all the same tools and projections that have produced 4 millionaire winners and millions more in total winnings than that. So head over to dailyroto.com/premium, save 10% with the promo code FNTSY and see the results for yourself. Roto Experts at the Park, Milwaukee Brewers version this week. And we're going to start it out with Chase Anderson, the ace of the Milwaukee Brewers, who actually handed the New York Mets just their second loss last night in the game, where actually he was pitching so well. He had a no-hitter through about five innings last night. Went six in the third innings pitch, two hits, one earned run, five strikeouts and two walks. And actually, it was a little confounding as to why they pulled him out of the game when he was dominating so much, but maybe because of the colder weather. But regardless, Anderson kind of picking up where he left off last year. 2.82 ERA, 1-1 with 18 strikeouts and a 0.99 WHIP in 16.13 innings. And here is my interview with Chase Anderson. Scott Engel here with Chase Anderson of the Brewers. Chase, you had a real breakthrough season last year. What do you feel the keys were? Was anything different in mechanic or pitch selection?
I think you're just having more pitches to go to with a cutter and the curveball consistently. And, you know, Derek Johnson, our pitching coach, has helped me a lot with that, to modify the grip of my curveball, to really implement the cutter and stick with it. And, you know, add a little velo, that helped too. I think the biggest thing is just having four pitches to go out there every 5 days to compete against the competitors. Definitely it boosts your confidence, so it gives you more options.
And also, right, you feel that helps you last longer into games because you can give hitters more looks?
Yeah, for sure. That's you hit the nail on the head right there. Just you can go through the lineup hopefully three times, hopefully four times, to get in the ninth inning. And I think the biggest thing, like you said, is to have those weapons to give hitters different looks every time they come up there with a different first pitch, a way to finish a guy, how to get ahead of guys, all kinds of different things. So definitely helps with getting deeper into ball games.
How important is it to have that type of arsenal when you pitch in what's generally considered as a hitter's park?
Yeah, Milwaukee definitely is more of the leans towards the hitter's way, but I enjoy pitching there. I love our fans, I love our home crowd, and just love being a part of that whole environment. And but it makes you really get more focused to make your pitches and try not to miss by much. And if you do miss, you're possibly gonna pay for it. So for me, it definitely helps me get into that kind of hyper focus mode to pitch. When you pitch in parks like that, to make your margin for error a lot less.
So after last year, a lot of people regard you, at least from the outside, as the ace of the team. Do you feel you're the ace of the team? That it's your job to go out there, and maybe stop a losing streak, et cetera. Do you feel that sort of responsibility now?
Yeah, I think you're more of a leader. But I think a lot of guys on our staff could feel that role. Jimmy being down, he had a great year last year too, and hopefully get him back as soon as possible. And Zach won 17 games for us last season. So I just feel like I'm just trying to do my part. But I do feel like I can go out there. If we're going through a little scuffle, try to end that. And I know other guys can do the same thing as well. So I think for me, just to continue to stay humble and continue to do what I've done in this game so far, just kind of helped me to this position. And I don't really consider myself the ace. A lot of guys joke around here with me, call me Chase the Ace, that kind of thing. But I think for me, just it's cool to have the respect of your teammates, but I think for me, any of the guys on our staff can do the job. So I just enjoy just going out there 5 days and competing and getting our team a chance to win. That's kind of the main goal, is to hopefully win every game you pitch.
You do have four pitches, though, like you said. Was there anything you were working on in spring training that you brought into the season that's working early for you?
Yeah, my changeup was kind of off in spring training, and that's kind of been my go-to pitch for my whole career, and it's been really good for me the last couple of starts. And the cutter has been very helpful when you got a righty out there sitting 2-0, licking his chops, looking for a heater, middle of the plate and middle of the way, and I can tell the cutter looks the same and just kind of goes off. They run out of barrel, so that's definitely those two pitches have been pretty good for me right now. I'm still working on trying to get that fastball command where I want it, and the curveball just probably need to throw a little bit more. But overall, I feel like I'm in a pretty good spot right now.
After last season, a lot of people. Your profile was raised in fantasy baseball. People say, I want to have Chase Anderson on my fantasy baseball team. Not that you know how people play or how it works, but do you take it as a compliment that people would draft you?
Yeah, it's cool. I think one of my wife's friend's husbands actually goes, I'm drafting you again this year in fantasy baseball, so hopefully you can do the same thing you did last year. It's just fun that people are kind of noticing you that way, and they want you on their team. So it means you're doing good things. So I think the biggest thing is to continue that and continue to build off that. And my goal is not to try to repeat what I did the year before, but just to continue to build on that. And hopefully I can look back with that after a Lord willing, a long career, and say, I did everything I could to produce at a high level for a long time. So the name of this game is just consistency. So it's pretty cool when people do that for fantasy baseball.
Chase, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Nice meeting you.
I will tell you this. Chase Anderson should probably work for Federal Express, because in my history of 9 years of doing Roto Experts at the park, I probably never interviewed a subject who spoke faster than he did, but at the same time, cramming a lot of information in there, George.
Yeah, he was good. That was a good interview. I like what he had to say. Very, very well said. Paid deference to his teammates, Jimmy Nelson when he's going to return. That was a good interview. I enjoyed that, Scott.
Yeah, it was interesting when he was talking about pitch selection last year. Although he missed a little bit of time with an injury, he was 12-4. With a 2.74 ERA and a 3.58 FIP, 8.47 Ks per nine. The strand rate was kind of low at 80.6, so you can't look at any peripherals and say, was this guy really getting lucky? When you look at the BABIP from last year as well, that was a little low in 2.65, so maybe pointing a little regression. A lot of fantasy analysts were kind of split on him coming into this year, because he didn't strike out a ton of guys. Not every fantasy expert was a believer, and he talked about his his four-pitch arsenal that he was using last year. It seems like this year, he's early on, he's going to the curveball a little bit less than he did last year and going to the changeup a little bit more. But I don't see anything from Chase Anderson so far that would lead me to believe that he's not able to repeat what he did last year.
I might agree with you. I don't believe I own any shares of Anderson in any leagues. Not necessarily for him. I mean, I don't want any shares of any Milwaukee pitching staff. I'm not a big fan of the ballpark as far as for pitchers. It's a hitter's park there. I think the upside's somewhat limited fantasy-wise with Chase Anderson, so I tend to stay away of players like that. If I'm going to take a fantasy SP3, SP4, I like to have some upside.
Yeah, and he also talked about the fact that Jimmy Nelson is out. We'll probably see Nelson back by July, and that'll give the Brewers a nice 1-2 punch there.
I mean, first you have to assume when Nelson comes back, he was what he did last year. Even Nelson, no one expected what he did last year to happen. So I think saying he's going to come back in July, which is about when his return is expected, but to be the same pitcher he was last year, I think that's a lot of optimism. I certainly wouldn't bank on that. I think maybe you're hoping the last 6 weeks of the season he can figure things out. So I am not as optimistic on Nelson as you are.
Yeah, I guess, well, he performed really well when he was healthy last year.
But he's coming from major injury. Assume he's going to be that good. I mean, it's pitchers, man. It's so hard to trust pitchers in general. I mean, and to just assume he's going to come back after being off for, 10 months? I'm gonna have a hard, but that's me. And so I have a hard time doing that with any position, but it's pitchers especially. Just to come back and assume they're truly going to help my team? No, maybe in season long, because I won't mind the ratio hits as much because your ratios will almost be set by then. But in weekly or daily, no, it won't be happening.
And last night was very interesting because we saw the injury to Corey Knebel and probably miss about at least another month. And they were kind of scrambling there. Jacob Barnes blew a save opportunity. Matt Albers got in there and got one save. But last night they brought in Josh Hader. And Hader retired six batters in the last two innings. They let him go out there for the ninth, even though they could have brought in Albers, but they also got a go-ahead home, another cushion home run by Domingo Santana. He got his first career save last night. This is a guy that was probably ticketed to be a starter from everything that we've read or that we've expected. But Hader struck out six batters in two innings. He struck out every batter that he faced last night, and he was completely dominant last night. He had command, he had location, velocity. Some of the broadcasters were even saying, he's like a young Chris Sale, et cetera. Somebody else compared him to young Randy Johnson. I don't know what this guy's doing in the bullpen, but after seeing Josh Hader, just trample the opposition the way he did last night, is there a chance that they use him as the closer until Knebel returns? Now, Knebel's a lefty himself, right? This team isn't averse to using a lefty as a closer.
And nor should you be if that's the best closer you have. I think the problem with Hader is this. I think he is the best reliever. I think I don't remember if you actually said it or were sort of implying it, and I agree, he probably should be in the rotation. Why they don't have him in the rotation, I don't know. But then again, I haven't understood a lot of the offseason moves from Milwaukee, but why, especially in regards to their pitching staff, why they didn't make moves there. My guess is this. The reason why he's not in the rotation is they'd like him in that multi-inning role in the bullpen. They can pitch. He can get more than three outs. And I think that's what's going to hurt his chance to close. Like I said, I think he is the best reliever there. I don't think there's much doubt about that. But they like the fact that he come in the seventh and maybe get the last two outs in the seventh and all three in the eighth. Or get six outs. Or even get more than that because he could be a starting pitcher or should be a starting pitcher. So that's my issue there. Could this thinking change at any time? Of course. Maybe it changed last night because of what he did. And all of a sudden he will be the closer now. It really depends on the manager's thinking as well. Do they think you have to have your best reliever in the ninth because you can't blow those saves and demoralize the team? Or are you becoming more maybe aggressive thinking or progressive thinking where games not always saved in the ninth. Sometimes the biggest outs are in the seventh, and I agree with that. But the players and the agents don't necessarily agree with that. They get all upset about that. So I wonder if this gives them an opportunity to do something like that, where you just bring in Hader when you need him. Not necessarily not a ninth inning automatically the ninth inning. I'll write more about this on Tuesday for the closer report for Roto Experts. Like I said, I do truly believe Hader is the best reliever. You know, he is left-handed. Knievel's right-handed, so it's not like they're – I guess if you believe they don't like left-handers, that could hurt against them too. They don't have a left-handed closer. But I don't think that's really in play here. I think what's in play here is the fact they like that he can get more than three outs.
Yeah, he was absolutely dominant last night. And Knievel's a righty, you know, my mistake there. I don't know why he was thinking. I'm thinking that he was a lefty. But, you know, a lot of times when you want a lefty specialist out of the bullpen, you know, if that's the role that they're going to put him in, you know, they might want to leave him there for that reason. It's not like Matt Albers scares anybody at the end, but right now it seems like Albers still may be the guy with the job.
Yeah, it does. I think if you're making a fab claim tonight and you need a closer, fine. You know, but I'm not wasting a lot of money on Alvarez, though, because he's not going to have the job long term. You know, he is the veteran there, and if once again, they could be in play here. A lot of managers sometimes like to go with the veteran, stabilize. He's not going to get shaken up by the opportunity, and especially if things don't go well in the ninth. Like I said, will I spend a couple of bucks, Scott, if you need a closer? Sure. But I don't think he'll have the job. Certainly not to Memorial Day. So I'm probably going to pass in most leagues unless I'm desperate.
You're listening to the Roto Experts here on Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Number to call in for your fantasy baseball or off-season football questions is 844-843-6879. That's 844-843-6879. Let's look at some hot players early on. Hanley Ramirez, and if you read my insider report on rotoexperts.com in the preseason, an exclusive edge draft package, you know, I was talking to somebody close to the team, and they said Hanley's a guy who's really an every other year guy, and also he's in a walk year. And when Hanley's got his back to the wall, he really likes to perform well. He wants to stay in Boston, wants to prove he should stay in Boston. And so far, he's off to a great start, hitting .362 with three home runs and 15 RBIs and a .415 OBP and a .617 slugging percentage.
Well, he's going to he has an option for next year. I think it's $22.5 million. I think it's 497 at-bats it kicks in. So he's well on his way to staying in Boston for at least another year, as that option will kick in and Boston will have to keep him. He looked great. The Yankee series earlier this week, he looked great until Sonny Gray hit him. I mean, not only was he hitting everything, he was hitting everything hard, right on the barrel. I said he looked really good, locked in. Hey, he did say during spring training he's going to go 30-30 this year. He's not. I don't see him hitting 30 stolen bases. 30 home runs wouldn't shock me. But he's not going to steal 30 bags here. That lineup is whole again. You know, Betts, Benintendi, H-Ram. J.D. Martinez sort of has that David Ortiz role there. Xander Bogaerts, where he got hurt, was playing fantastic as well. It's there. It's deep. It's dangerous. The only question about the for me, for Hanley Ramirez, I know some fantasy owners don't like to clog their DH spot with a true DH. It doesn't bother me, and he should have first base eligibility eventually because J.D. Martinez is going to play a lot of DH, so when H-Ram plays, he'll be playing first base. He can move to first base or utility your corner infield spot, so you're covered there as well eventually. I'm a believer in Hanley. In that lineup, I'm pretty much a believer in all the Red Sox.
Yeah, the Red Sox off to a terrific start this year. Rick Porcello was also off to a terrific start, almost looking like he was Cy Young 2 years ago. Porcello wasn't as good as when we saw him win the Cy Young, nor was he bad as last year, but he's off to an excellent start.
Best line ever from that Cy Young year was Kate Upton, when she said, I thought I was the only person allowed to F Justin Verlander. Best line ever, because you said he was good, but he wasn't as good as Verlander that year. But he looks great this season. I know his first two starts were against the Rays and the Marlins, and let's face it, not the best teams on the planet there, but shut down the Yankees the other night. You know, ran into some trouble late, but he's got it back. He's got his mojo back. He's not a hard throw. He knows he has to move the ball in and out. The sinker's working. So right now he's becoming a very good pitcher again, and once again, maybe he's more relaxed knowing, hey, you're going to get six runs a night on that offense, so you can relax, just make your pitches. You don't have to worry about giving up a two-run homer in the first. You're still going to be in the game.
Yeah. Do you think Porcello can keep it up, though? It's like he's not a fantasy favorite because he doesn't seem to strike out a lot of guys.
That's the problem. That's why he's always been the fantasy bugaboo. But, you know, for pitchers that level, Scott, you know, SP3s, or whatever you draft, people drafting him really late. He was could be benched for a lot of guys. You're not going to get every category hit. No SP 3, 4, 5 is going to hit every category. So you have to give up something. At least with Porcello, you know, you have to go for Ws. Boards are going to win a lot of his starts. So when you're good for Ws, quality starts even are in play if you're in that kind of league.
Yeah, the Red Sox, one of these hot teams early on with the Mets and also the Angels as well, as they're getting a lot of power from Justin Upton and Mike Trout. We'll look at some other hot starters to the season. It's only April, but we got all the fantasy analysis you need right here on the Roto Experts on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. More baseball with Scott Engel and George Kurtz next.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Back here on the Roto Experts, Scott Engel and George Kurtz. Fantasy Factor is the perfect daily fantasy site for the casual recreational player. Flatter prize pools, smaller fields, and single entry contests only. Fantasy Factor always has fun contests going on. This year, Fantasy Factor is running a $100,000 home run derby. Simply sign up and enter www.fantasyfactor.com. That's www.fantasyfactor.com. Check out that $1,000 home run derby. Simply sign up and enter. So let's get back to some of these hot starters that we were talking about here, George. And Jose Martinez hitting .373 with 3 home runs and 15 RBIs. This guy has pretty much picked up where he left off last year. And although baseball is a constant game of adjustments, it doesn't seem like pitchers have figured him out just yet. He's already homered off of some excellent pitchers so far, including Noah Syndergaard.
I don't believe in Jose Martinez. You know, I think he may be the best hitter on that team at this point. We talked about him last week as well, and he's not there in any waiver wise. He is. I'm certainly going out and grabbing him. I may have had some trepidations coming into the season. I didn't think he was going to be get off to quite the start he has. But I believe he's legit. I think he's got a good source of power there, good source of ribbies. Maybe not as much speed if that's what you're looking for. But everything else, I'm game with there, Scott. A couple of news and notes, by the way. The Toronto-Cleveland game has also been postponed today. So same games that were in trouble yesterday are in trouble again today. I'm looking at the Yankee weather report as well. 90% chance of rain all afternoon. It doesn't look like they have any chance of playing game one. Maybe game two. Tonight it lets up and they can get that game in. But there are going to be a whole lot of doubleheaders coming down the road.
All right. That'll change some pitching rotations, obviously, coming up for the week ahead. Of course, you want to go to rotoexperts.com and check out our new fantasy baseball weekly planner with Brandon C. Williams. Not only guys to pick up, but also two-turn pitchers to use as well, and even some daily fantasy advice as well. Gregory Polanco, this is a guy that we just want to stay healthy. So far, 5 home runs and 15 RBIs. He is only hitting .220, but run production has certainly been there. He has stolen one base.
You know, I'm always impressed by guys who what Polanco's doing, because he's doing it. They're playing snow. It's really ridiculous. What's going to happen when the ball starts to really travel here? And will that bring the average up as well? Polanco, I guess it's sort of a good and bad thing. Because right now, if you have him, you love the power. But the average is being a much bigger drag than we expected. So that could be somewhat of an issue here. That being said, I'm buying in here. If someone wants to sell him, do what they consider a sell high here, I'll take a shot at him, but I'm not giving up major answers. I do wonder if this is just a hot start. It's only April 15th, tax day. So I wonder if we need to relax a little bit, see what happens over a long season here. And you mentioned as well, health is always an issue with Mr. Polanco.
Yes, as long as he stays healthy, I think you're going to see the batting average come up as well. Javier Baez has 4 home runs and 14 RBIs, but he's only hitting 191 right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of the same situation, but in the opposite there. He's had some power. He's got 4 home runs, a couple of two home run games. Had the big hit yesterday in that game that helped them come back with a down 10-2 at one point, whatever it was. That game should have never been played. Joe Madden was right. I was watching that. That was a joke. I know Basil wants to get these games in, but you can't be playing in 20-degree weather, which is what the wind chill was in Chicago. But once again, they are a good comeback. Baez is driving in runs, so the power production is there. The average has to come up. And I'll say it again, Scott. I think this is a lot of this is because of the weather. You know, even Baez mentioned it yesterday. You have to make sure you barrel the ball. If you get jammed or you hit the ball on the end of the bat, you're going to feel those bees in your hand. And it hurts. It doesn't feel good. So I think right now it is pitcher's weather throughout all these northern teams, Northeast or North Central America, about how it's not anywhere near ideal hitting conditions.
No, not yet. You know, it's, those are excellent points. You know, we're talking about all the cancellations for today, et cetera. J.D. Martinez off to a good start with 3 home runs and 13 RBIs. Mikel Franco has 2 home runs and 13 RBIs. Had a big game last week, hitting just .242, though. Starting to cool off just a little bit here. Joey Gallo hitting .212 with 5 home runs and 13 RBIs. Pretty much what you expect from Joey Gallo. How about Jed Lowry hitting .339 with 3 home runs and 12 RBIs? Talk about a guy that's got to stay healthy.
My problem with Lowry, I mean, you're right. Lowry's always been able to hit somewhat if he can stay healthy. But I guess he's just not the sexy guy because he's small. If you ever watch Lowry, he's not a big guy, so you don't expect that much power to come from him. But he's a nice little guy you can plug into your lineup when you need someone, but probably not someone I'm going to use each and every day putting him in there, especially if you're in a daily lineup league. More of a, I don't want to say a matchup because I don't think that's necessarily fair to Jed Lowry, but that's what I feel about Jed. I think when you're talking about Philadelphia, I believe in Franco. I do believe in Franco. I think he will hit, at the very least, hit for power. So I thought he was a nice corner infield grab late. My worry about Franco is that there's going to be an odd man out a lot of games here until either there's an injury or they make a trade because of Scott Kingery. You know, when they signed him to that 6-year, $24 million deal before he even played a game in Major League Baseball, it told you all you need to know about him. The Phillies believe in him, and they want him to play. They didn't sign to that contract to sit him on the bench. So they're going to play him, which means, you know, Franco may sit. Hernandez may sit. Maybe it's one of the outfielders. I wouldn't even shock me if Santana was going to sit every now and then. Shortstop, I think, would be – he has played a little shortstop, but he's not – that's the one person where I don't think he can play on any kind of regular basis. So maybe I'm not as worried about Crawford, but Crawford still has to hit. And it's something he's not doing all that much yet. You know, I know he seems to be hitting a little bit better of late, hitting a home run yesterday. Crawford was once a top prospect. His project sort of got dulled a little bit. A couple of bad seasons in the minors, including some issues they had with him, maybe not trying his hardest, maybe being upset that he didn't get called up earlier. He's only batting .167, but last couple of games, he's got a 3-game hitting streak, 4-game hitting streak, actually, so he seems to be hitting better. Maybe he's finally turning that corner. My issue is this. I don't think Franco's not going to play 6-7 games a week because Kingery is going to have to play some third base. So, you know, you talk about a guy, well, we like the power, but if he's only playing 4-5 games a week, does that hurt him? Is that because you can't get into that groove? You're always going to have to sit eventually. I guess you could be an out there and say, well, he should be sitting against tougher right-handers. Maybe that could be it. But that's my issue, Scott. I really like all the Philly hitters, but they're not all going to play every day.
Yeah, Franco has to keep hitting because otherwise he's obviously going to, you know, feel Kingery pushing him because they want to get his bat into the lineup in some way. Reports out of Philadelphia is that he's probably not going to play any first base, so I don't think Carlos Santana is going to have to worry about getting days off with Kingery playing first base. He's going to play everything probably except for first base, catcher, and pitcher, and they want to find a regular way to get his bat into the lineup. So Franco, you know, has to keep hitting. here. You know, this guy was considered a top prospect for years. It's past the point where he's post-hype, and now he's got to start producing. Albert Pujols is playing okay so far, 282 with 3 home runs and 9 RBIs. This is a guy that went in the reserve round of Tout Wars, and the comment from Ron Chandler was like, wow, you know, how the mighty have fallen. This guy went from a first-round pick to not even being drafted, but Pujols is showing that he can still contribute.
And that's not surprising. I mean, once again, you're hitting behind Mike Trout, you should be able to do some damage there. I think the average is going to come down. Excuse me. Right now he's batting 282, but he'll hit his home runs. He hit his home runs last year. I think, in some ways, I think Pujols sort of has Matt Harvey syndrome, which we discussed about, where people either want him to be, if he's not great, then he's terrible. There's no in-between here, and that's not certainly not true. Last year, everybody downgraded him. He still went 23-101. Yes, he batted 241. I think, once again, that's what's about what you're going to see. Maybe it's 250. 255 by the end of the season. But I think he's going to hit 25-plus home runs, driving a bunch of runs. So there's value there. He is playing first base, so he'll have that eligibility if he doesn't already have it in your league. So he's not going to clog up that DH spot. Like I said, I think if I'm picking up Pujols, if he's available in your league, which he might be. I know he's available in a couple of leagues that I play in. You're doing it for the power production. I'm not doing it for average. I know he's going to be a drag on my average. I just don't expect him to be a major drag. I can survive a 250, 255 average. I don't think he's going to bat in Joey Gallo area, 210, 215. So I'm not quite as worried about that. But I think the power will be there. I understand he's 38. Well, he says he's 38. I think he's older than that. But, at this point, can't worry about that. Hitting in a good line with Ohtani there, Trout there. No one's looking at what Pujols produces anyway. You know, he's sort of an afterthought because of everybody else around him.
DJ LeMahieu's hitting 308 with 4 home runs and 8 RBIs. And you always looked at LeMahieu's sort of build and said, why does this guy hit for more power, etc.? Although Coors Field traditionally, it's not really a homer's park. It's more of a doubles park. But still, you would expect more power from DJ LeMahieu. But we know the batting average is always going to be there. But the home runs really looks like an anomaly so far.
You would think. You're right. I mean, he's 6'4", 210, or 220, actually. So, yeah, the power, you're right. You do expect more power out of him, even though his best power year, 11 home runs in 2016. Only hit 8 last year. So I would have to agree with you. Once again, maybe this is the big year where he's going to try and drive the ball more, launch angle, exit velocity, and all this other stuff. Maybe he's been studying up on that to try and put the ball in the air and hit home runs. But generally, he's been... I understand why fans stayed away from him, because even doubles, he's not big on that either. 32 is his career high, 28 last year. He's been an average guy for fantasy, and an average guy that comes with minimum speed. He only stole 6 bases last year. He did have 11 and 23 the year before. If he gets up to the 20s again, then regardless of the home runs, he'll have value again, as far as his value will increase again. But generally, he's been an average run guy. That being said, for where you could get him in fantasy drafts, I liked him, because you could wait forever. No one was taking this guy early. Some people even got him as a middle infielder, and that, to me, that's incredible value there for what he can do with upside. But I agree with you. I think he may set a career home run career for home runs this year. I think he might beat his 11, but I don't see him hitting 25, 28, where it's like, oh, my God, who saw this coming? But I could see him hitting 14, 15.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the isolated power so far, I mean, it's very early, but, still interesting to take a look. Right now it's 262, which is... that's more than twice his career norm. His ISO is usually 103.
Yeah, it's usually, it was 99 last year. I mean, I think 0.099. It was 147. So it really comes down to what you believe. Do you all of a sudden believe this is going to be the year where he's figured it out? I mean, some players have, Scott, because we know it. Some people really take this launch angle thing. They've changed their swing to put that ball in the air, because that's what's big in today's game. A lot of today's game is home run or strikeout. It's so hard to put together a whole bunch of strings, a string of hits with today's pitching. So many players throw hard, especially in the later innings, that they believe either you hit a home run or you strike out. That's all that really matters. I don't agree with that, but some players do. So they've concentrated, they changed their swing to put that ball in the air more. So maybe he's, I don't know for sure if he's done one way or the other, but maybe he has done that, which would change things.
Yeah, right now his home run to fly ball rate, though, is 23.5%. So that's really got to correct itself in a major way. Another guy who's gotten off to a hot start, I don't think a lot of people saw coming, and he went undrafted in a lot of leagues, is Dansby Swanson, hitting 357 with 10 RBIs so far, and a a 390 on base percentage. We talked a lot about Swanson last week. You know, I don't know how much you're going to get in terms of the counting numbers with Swanson here, but you know, he started to show signs of playing better last December. And what do you think about, you know, taking a flyer on him as a middle infielder?
I mean, I don't mind. Middle infield is fine, but middle infield is deep. I mean, second base was so deep. The second base one was went 18, 19, 20 deep. I mean, guys like Castro were going as a 20th second baseman. You know, you're throwing some shortstops there. That's my only issue with Swanson. He was a top prospect in the Braves system. The fact that people gave up on him so quickly, as far as being, he's done, he's not going to be a good baseball player. Forget fantasy. That's silly. I mean, come on, after one year, you can't do that. Yes, last year was pretty atrocious, pretty bad. But it's good to see, once again, he's worked down. He's batting .357 in the early going here. That ballpark does seem to be lean towards the hitter side. The Braves are getting better as a team, so there'll be better hitters around him. Less pressure on him, especially once they call up Acuna. You know, no one will be even talking about Swanson anyway. He'll just be in the background. So middle infield, I don't have a problem with it, but I do think because it's so deep, that maybe, you know, hey, you have him now because he's hot, that's fine. But maybe if you'll move on because there'll be somebody else you want that maybe hits a different category. Because that's my only issue, that fantasy-wise, outside of average, what category are you looking to hit? You know, could he be the guy that offsets a Joey Gallo? Now, that I like, if we're going in that direction, because I think he could hit 300. So he could be that kind of player, Scott, that offsets what Gallo's going to do, because Gallo's going to hit 40 home runs with bat 220. So you might need a 310 guy to offset that, but there's not much else coming with it there. I don't know if he reaches double-digit home runs. I don't think so. I don't think he's going to hit double-digit stolen bases. So where else is he helping you?
What do you think he tops at that stolen base-wise? I mean, is this like a 10-10 sort of guy?
Yeah, that's the way I feel. And I think even that, I think the 10 home runs can come more than the 10 stolen bases. You just look at his career in minor leagues. His highest stolen base is 7. And I don't know offhand if the Braves are a big believer in stolen bases. I think they are, so I think they will let him run. But I don't think he's going to be a major run guy. But I think 10-10 is the ceiling there. It's something you could hope to achieve.
All right, taking a look at some other guys that are off to pretty good starts in terms of driving in runs, et cetera, and hitting for a good average. Gene Segura is staying healthy, .353 so far with 7 RBIs. You only get 1 steal, but I think you're certainly going to expect more than that. Also, some other guys. Drubal Cabrera recently had a 11-game hitting streak snapped. He's hitting .321 with 3 home runs and 5 RBIs. This is a guy that consistently goes in the number 20 sort of rounds, it seems, every year, and nobody really wants to draft him. But this is a guy who consistently hits about .280 with about 15 to 20 home runs.
Yeah, Struve was a good professional baseball player. Can play multiple positions on a team, and he has power. I mean, you saw that home run he hit in, I think it was Miami early in the week, and my God, that thing was shot. So I think he's a nice player. I think he, once again, gets caught up in the problem was there is so many good second basemen this year, guys who you can claim as a middle infielder, and he got caught up in that. Because you mentioned it, he went in the round 20s. It's absolutely correct. It's where he was going. I know I've got him in a league or two. But there were so many other guys right around him. It sort of become, well, pick your poison. Which guy do you want? You know, what categories are you looking to hit? You know, with Cabrera, I know me, when it gets later, generally I'm looking to hit speed. That's what I need. I don't need the power. And I think that's where Estrella's better at. You know, if you're looking for a guy who can play and maybe hit 15 home runs, you know, I think that's what you're getting to. If he plays full-time and stays healthy, 20 wouldn't shock me. You know, so that's what I like about Estrella. With an average, that's going to probably lean more towards helping you than hurting you. So if that's what you're looking for, I think you got something there in Estrella. He's only 32 years old. It seems like he's been around forever. When he'd be 38, 39, but he's only 32. Speed's not going to be there. He'll still get a smattering of bases, but nothing all that great. But I like Estrella Cabrera for what he can give you if that's what you were looking for. For me, though, usually I'm not looking for that. Although, because he was there, I do have him in a couple of leagues.
Yeah, I ended up drafting him late because I had to replace Daniel Murphy for like the first month, maybe month plus. And the versatility, like you talk about, is something else you look at with this Drupal Cabrera. And if the Mets continue to stay healthy, they're going to continue to hit. And that's a good lineup that Cabrera is in. We'll talk about some pitching coming up next here on the second hour of the Roto Experts right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.